Doctor Who, Short Trips. The Way of the Empty Hand by Julian Richards. Read by Fraser Hines. The world was beautiful. Anyone would have to admit that. Soaring sable mountains pierced the heart of a silver sky, capped with golden snow. Indigo rivers ran down to the sea where silver sands were littered with laughing children and joyful families. They were humanoid, but not quite human. Elegant, graceful creatures with slender limbs and wide, innocent eyes set deep in horned skulls. Their cat-like tails swayed behind them. It looked for all the universe like an idyllic place, which was probably why Jamie ran out of the TARDIS as soon as it appeared on the scanner. The Doctor sighed. It would have been nice to check that the planet was suitable for human life before he'd taken off. At least Zoe had been sensible enough to wait. Well, it seems to be safe. The Doctor looked up from the console. She was now just outside the doorway, leaning back into the TARDIS. Zoe, I've not finished the landing checks yet. It's bad enough that Jamie's gone out there. We don't know what the atmosphere's like. It could be poisonous or freezing or anything. It's quite mild, really, Doctor, Zoe replied. Besides, the doors have been open since Jamie left, and we haven't been poisoned yet. Luckily, the console readout seemed to concur with this. Yes, well, the TARDIS says it's all right, so it probably is, the Doctor said at last, smiling brightly. Come on, then. Let's catch up with Jamie and tell him he was right. As it happened, Jamie was not quite safe. In fact, when the Doctor and Zoe stepped out onto the planet's surface, he was nowhere to be seen. The custodian enjoyed his work, especially on days like today, when there were fresh new faces to break in, or just to break. As he walked through the corridors of the Warworld's underlevels, he found himself trying to whistle. It wasn't a very good attempt, but no one would dare tell the custodian that. He was custodian of the Warworld, master of the gladiators, warden of the jails, keeper of the Overlord's peace, the second most powerful being on the entire planetoid, and a very nasty man altogether. No one dared tell him anything much. The new warriors had been transported into the deepest, darkest cell in the planetoid because the custodian believed that terrifying gladiators into submission was the best way to keep them in order. Being transported into a dark cell was meant to be terrifying, especially one at the heart of the Warworld. Such mechanized planetoids were feared throughout the galaxy. The custodian's particular one, Combatia, had passed over 10 new worlds since last he came down here. And on each, it had located and taken the greatest potential combatant the planet had to offer. As he reached the cell, he saw that something was not quite right. Of the 10 new gladiators, 8 of them had been suitably cowed by their experiences and sat gibbering in the 4 corners. However, the 2 humans, and the custodian wasn't exactly sure how there happened to be 2 humans, looked far less than suitably cowed. The shorter of them had long hair, held up in a top knot. He was sat on the floor, his legs crossed, his eyes closed, his hands resting on his knees. He seemed completely at peace with the world, which set the custodian rather on edge. The other was wearing a skirt, which the custodian took as a bad sign, and he seemed to be searching the walls for a hidden way out. Thankfully, there wasn't one, but it was still a disconcerting amount of initiative to be shown by someone who was supposed to have been cowed.
"Listen up, scum!"
shouted the custodian. That got their attention. He explained to them how things were going to be, that they had been chosen to fight for the glory of the Overlord, Corpulus the Magnificent, in the arenas of Combatia, the greatest war world in the cosmos. He told them that their miserable existences were in his hands, and that most of them would not survive the experience. The translation systems were working, and 8 of the prisoners seemed to accept their predicament. However, the 2 humans seemed to think they had a choice. "We will not fight for your amusement," said the shorter one, now standing up and staring with worrying calm at the custodian. "Aye, we're not some dogs for you to tell what to do," said the one in the skirt. "What if we choose not to fight, eh?" "Then you will die," is what the custodian should have said, he realized later, as he was walking back up the corridor. As it was, he simply stared for a moment, then turned and walked away.
"Why couldn't we have taken one of the cat people,"
he thought to himself,
"instead of another human? Why did it have to be another human?"
Jamie turned to the other man in the cell. "You look like you're from Earth." "So do you," replied the man, smiling wryly. "But I thought they said they only took one from each world." Jamie turned to look at the other inhabitants of the cell. None looked as if they came from the same species. Aye, aye, did. Whereabouts are you from?
Okinawa.
The name meant nothing to Jamie. The man didn't seem surprised. Japan, he elaborated. Where are you from, friend?
Scotland.
I'm Jamie McCrimmon. Jamie offered his hand, and the man shook it, smiling.
Funakoshi Gishin, he said.
Pleasure to meet you, Funakoshi.
Silently, Jamie hoped that the doctor and Zoe were all right.
The doctor and Zoe hoped that Jamie was all right. They were trying to work out what had happened to him. Some of the nearby happy families told them that he'd just disappeared into thin air. A patch of scorched grass in front of the TARDIS suggested to Zoe one of several possible explanations. Could he have been teleported?
No, I don't think so, said the doctor, who was looking elsewhere. Teleportation is a very tricky science. Not many races have mastered it. And even if these people had a teleportation beam that fine, it would have generated an intense amount of heat.
Enough to scorch the grass where someone stood, by any chance?
Asked Zoe, looking pointedly at the blackened grass.
Yes, I should imagine so,
said the doctor absently.
Then he followed Zoe's gaze.
Oh, my word. Jamie's been teleported.
Funakoshi was going to be a schoolteacher. Jamie wondered how a schoolteacher in training could potentially be the most capable warrior on Earth. But Funakoshi seemed to be from his future anyway, so things were probably quite different then. Their other cellmates had slowly become talkative. Some were soldiers, some were warriors, and all of them had heard of the war world of Combatia. It travelled across the galaxy, snatching up whosoever it pleased to fight for its overlord's pleasure. Apparently, no one ever escaped from Combatia. Funakoshi pointed out to them that just because something had never been done, it wasn't necessarily impossible. Even so, only he and Jamie seemed willing to contemplate any chance of escape. Before they could persuade the others further, the custodian returned, flanked by armored guards carrying electrified whips.
The Overlord wishes to see battle,
the custodian told him.
Four of his new arrivals, two against two, and to the death.
He pointed to two of the prisoners, a hulking grey-skinned brute who had introduced himself as Markan, and a creature named Kel, who seemed human until Jamie saw his skin rippling with lightning.
You two,
said the custodian,
against the two humans.
Jamie could see that he had chosen Kel and Markan as the two combatants he thought most dangerous. Clearly he wanted Jamie and Funakoshi dead. Looking at their opponents, Jamie was worried he might get his wish. Once the doctor realised that Jamie had been teleported, he immediately set to working out the boy's destination. Zoe stood at the side of the console, watching as he tried to establish the teleport beam's trajectory. She was fairly sure she should have been the one doing it, but the doctor didn't like her using the TARDIS controls. Aha! He cried at last, straightening up from the console and grinning. I think I found him. Where? Zoe hurried over to read the coordinates. But that's deep space, she said, checking them against the charts on the scanner screen. He's probably on a craft or space station or of some kind.
The doctor was already fiddling with controls on the far side of the console.
But how are we going to get to him? Zoe asked. I mean, we can hardly use the TARDIS.
I don't see why not, said the doctor, a little indignantly.
But you can't control it, she blurted out.
Can't control it? Can't control it? The doctor seemed almost angry at the notion. Of course I can control it.
He was calmer now, but still indignant.
And besides, if I lock the TARDIS directly onto the source of the teleport beam, there's no way we can go astray.
Zoe still had one question. Doctor?
Yes, sir, Zoe,
he asked, looking up from the console. What are we going to do when we get there? I mean, whoever was powerful enough to abduct Jamie...
Oh, I think they'll be reasonable, said the doctor. It's bound to all have been a silly mistake. We'll just step outside, have a little word with them, get Jamie back, and then we'll be off.
He smiled brightly.
I don't think they are going to be reasonable, Doctor, said Zoe several minutes later, as she and the Doctor slowly raised their hands above their heads. Their backs to the TARDIS doors, they were surrounded by armoured guards, wielding nasty-looking electrified whips. Nearby, a blubbery and noxious-smelling figure perched on a throne several sizes too small for it. Overlord Corpulus the Magnificent had chosen his own honorific, but the name his father had given him had been prophetically apt. He sat on a throne built for a giant,
yet still he flowed over the edges of it. Zoe would have found the sight comical if he hadn't so clearly emanated evil. He was surrounded by retainers, scantily clad men and women attending to him alongside the armoured guards. Corpulus seemed amused by the new arrivals, laughing to himself. He burbled when he laughed, as if his mouth was full of water.
What new playthings do we have here? An old thing and a pretty thing. Neither of them fighters, not fit for the arena.
Appearances can be deceptive, the doctor gabbled. You can never be sure what a person is capable of just by looking at them. Don't judge a book by its cover and all that. For all you know, we could be the finest fighters in the universe. Perfect material for which arena is it exactly? The Overlord laughed.
The old thing is a jester. Why, it is my arena. I am the Overlord of Combatia. Come and see.
He beckoned them over, and the Doctor and Zoe tentatively moved past the guards to join him. From this vantage point, they could see a great screen projected before the throne. Zoe could make out a grand arena, its stands filled with a baying crowd, whilst four figures stood in the centre, armed and facing each other. Two of them were alien figures, and two were human. Not just human, Zoe realised with mounting horror. One of them was Jamie. The sabre felt good in Jamie's hand. Not that he wouldn't have preferred his dirk, but the guards didn't know about that yet. When they'd been shown into the armoury to prepare for the battle, Jamie had been amazed by the array of weapons on show in a room that seemed to rival even the TARDIS for size. He'd found a sword that felt reassuringly familiar. Markan had chosen a warhammer that looked to be as heavy as Jamie himself. Kel, meanwhile, had selected a sword of a design Jamie didn't recognise. Long, slightly curved, and now rippling with the same electricity that flowed over Kel himself, for Nakoshi had not taken anything. "My hand is empty," he said to Jamie, "but that does not mean I am unarmed." Jamie thought he should have been more worried about fighting Kel and Markan, but somehow the unarmed schoolteacher's peaceful confidence was rubbing off on him. Stepping into the arena, Jamie had noticed a huge screen set high above the crowd, and from it, the bloated, grinning face of Corpulus looked down on them. The thought of bringing pleasure to a malignant slug like that sickened him, so he did his best to ignore it. He turned to where Kel and Markan were entering from the far side of the arena. Already Kel had positioned himself so he was opposite Furukoshi, while the huge form of Markan was moving to face Jamie. "Looks like they've decided who they want," he said to Furukoshi, who just nodded.
"Any thoughts?"
"Keep changing opponents," said Furukoshi. "Don't let either of them learn how you fight."
Jamie nodded. It made sense.
Kel and Markan were coming towards them now, walking, jogging, then running straight for them. Jamie glanced back at Furukoshi, who was staring calmly at the approaching Kel. Jamie turned back to Markan's looming form, gripping his sword tightly.
"Krigatua!"
he roared, running towards the alien, sword held high. The Overlord was not happy. It wasn't because the skirted one had managed to trick the giant into running headfirst into a wall. It wasn't because the short one had caught the electrified one's sword with his bare hands, twisted it out of his grip, and thrown it away. It wasn't even because the two humans had ultimately managed to defeat both the warriors his custodian had assured him would win. It was because the two humans were now helping their opponents to their feet and refusing to kill them.
"Finish them!"
he burbled angrily.
"Do it!"
"Do your own dirty work," the skirted one shouted up at the screen. "They deserve to die no more than we do,"
his short accomplice added. The Overlord would not stand this insurrection.
"Guard! Guard! Kill them all!"
"No!"
shouted the silly old thing, standing beside him.
"You can't!"
shouted the pretty one.
"Guard? I'm the Overlord. I can do whatever I want. Why can't I have them killed?"
he asked, only because he was certain the question was rhetorical. The old thing, apparently, decided that it wasn't.
"Because mercy is the mark of the greatest warriors."
The Overlord realised that this exchange was being relayed to the crowd in the arena. They had fallen silent upon hearing this. The guards had stopped moving towards the fighters. The Overlord considered the matter. Finding the greatest warriors was the purpose of Compatia after all. And if this silly old thing had knowledge of what made the greatest warrior...
Prove it!
He challenged.
Let them live, and I will,
said the silly old thing with disconcerting calm.
Let them live, and I'll defeat any champions you send against me, without killing them and without violence.
Doctor! Cried the skirted boy from the arena. Doctor, you can't!
Oh, yes, I can, Jamie,
said the doctor quite calmly.
And wouldn't that be a sight to see?
He was grinning at the Overlord now. The Overlord hated other people grinning at him. Grinning was what he did. He wanted to see this doctor in the arena. And the Overlord always got what he wanted. The doctor's first opponent was a favourite of the arena. He was Bloodbane, slaughterer of millions, champion of 1,000 battles, king of carnage. The doctor asked him if he enjoyed this sort of thing, if it gave him a full, satisfying life, whether he'd considered the possibility that there might be another way to deal with his emotions beyond slaughter. It took some coaxing, but Bloodbane eventually admitted that he wrote poetry. With some encouragement from the doctor, he recited a few examples. It was very good poetry, the doctor said, and Bloodbane blushed. The doctor suggested Bloodbane should try to make a living from his poetry, and so Bloodbane laid down his weapons there and then and declared that he was devoting himself to the pen over the sword. The Overlord was not amused. With all the focus now on the doctor in the arena, Jamie, Funakoshi, and their 8 companions were moved into the main cell block with the rest of the gladiators. Jamie noted that they outnumbered the guards, and a number of them were in awe of the 2 humans for daring to defy the Overlord. Jamie couldn't believe that it had never happened before. "But there's hundreds of you," he said, incredulously. "And you're all warriors. You could easily beat the guards." "The guards have weapons," he was told. "The warriors do not." Funakoshi reiterated that warriors didn't need weapons. A warrior was defined by what was in his heart, not in his hand. Some were still unconvinced. "They need a symbol," Funakoshi told Jamie. "Something to rally round and believe in. A weapon. We've got one weapon," Jamie told them, drawing his dirk, "and we've got one chance to be free." He knew that Funakoshi was right. They didn't need to hold weapons, just to know they had one. Jamie and Funakoshi moved further into the cells to see who else would join them. The doctor's second opponent was a cyborg, more machine than man, mounted atop an iron horse which he boasted was smarter than any being on Combatia. The doctor asked the horse what it thought of the arrangement. The horse wasn't best pleased with the way things were. The cyborg told it to shut up, which didn't help. The doctor watched as the horse announced it was going on strike and wouldn't be supporting the cyborg into battle unless its terms were met. The cyborg said its terms were unacceptable, so the horse carried out its threat. Since the cyborg was wired into the horse, he was unable to dismount and fight alone during the industrial action. The battle was forfeited, and the doctor declared victorious. The Overlord was not amused. Zoe didn't like her new role as one of the Overlord's personal entourage. She despised the fawning stupidity of her fellow attendants. She loathed the clothes she'd been made to wear. She didn't like having to watch the doctor in the arena, or not knowing where they'd taken Jamie. But mostly, she didn't like having to be anywhere near the Overlord. Zoe had faced down Cybermen, Ice Warriors, Crotons, and even the dreaded Quarks. But none of them had been quite as unapologetically vile as Overlord Corpulus. He had one redeeming feature, which was that he routinely became engrossed in the events on his screen. At present, he was so caught up in throwing a temper tantrum every time the Doctor won that he didn't notice what was going on around him. More specifically, he hadn't noticed Zoe accessing the War World's central computer system. There appeared to be one computer network controlling the entire planetoid. Each level of control was more difficult to access than the one before, and Zoe's task was made doubly difficult by having to do it without drawing attention. She had managed to find the security camera feeds and was cycling through them in the hope of finding Jamie. And there he was, in the main holding cells, talking with the other prisoners. The other man from the arena was with him, as well as their 2 opponents. The 4 of them now seemed to be close friends, moving from group to group, talking with each combatant, showing them something, and then moving on. They must be planning an escape, Zoe realized. It was exactly the sort of thing Jamie would try to do without even being able to open the doors. She had begun searching for the door overrides when the custodian entered the throne room and saw her. The Doctor's third opponent called himself the Beast Lord, and he brought with him captured monsters that he set on his foes. There was a spider-like thing with a humanoid torso rising out from it, scuttling on eight legs with a shard of bone extending from each of its 10 hands. There was an armored turtle-like creature that belched out gouts of fire, the ground beneath it steaming as it advanced. There was a shapeless, shifting blob with writhing arms rising out of its mass. 13 hands searching and grasping. And such strange hands too, the Doctor noted. And there was a shrieking pterodactyl-like beast which soared above the arena, circling its prey. The Doctor took out his recorder and began to play. It was a soft, sweet, sad tune. The Doctor played and played, and when he stopped playing, all of the beasts were asleep. And the Beast Lord wept to hear such sweet music. Having watched the Doctor's latest ruse, the Overlord was, unsurprisingly, throwing another temper tantrum. So it had fallen to the custodian to deal with the girl he'd caught accessing the central computer. She was clearly no use as a fighter, so he'd sent her down to the processor plant. The fighters needed sustenance, and the butcher bots down there would make short work of her. Curious to know what she'd been up to, he flicked through the access history on the wall panel. The security feed from the main cell came up, and he saw the four new fighters talking with some of the old hands.
Prisoners don't usually communicate this much,
he thought to himself. Then he saw a flash of steel in the hands of the skirted human.
I knew there'd be trouble,
he muttered to himself, as he made his way out of the throne room and down towards the cells. The last of the prisoners had been recruited to Jamie and Funakoshi's rebellion, persuaded by the returning combatants who had just faced the Doctor. No one had quite known what to make of Bloodbane the Poet, but he had sworn his sword and songs to freedom and now fully supported the escape plan. The Iron Horse was also with them, its cyborg rider forced to go along with it. The Beast Lord had sat sobbing in a corner until Bloodbane had sung to him, and now he was with them too. All that remained was to find a way out of the cells. An answer will present itself, Funakoshi had said, but only if we seek it. And so Jamie had sought it. He'd been seeking an answer for a good 10 minutes, examining the bars and the electronic lock on the door before he turned to the others with a plan. The bars are solid enough. If I use my duck to prise the control panel away from the wall, Kel might be able to overload it with lightning.
Or I could just open it from here, said Zoe.
Jamie agreed that it might well be the better idea. Then he realized that Zoe wasn't in the cell.
I'm in the kitchens,
said her voice from a speaker in the door panel.
The robots here were quite stupid. It just took a simple logic problem to keep them distracted long enough to access the central computer. Hang on.
The door clicked open, just as the custodian and four whip-wielding guards arrived. The custodian swore as he saw the door open. He ordered the guards forward to subdue the prisoner. But Kel's electrified form was already slipping through the door. The guards lashed their whips at him, wrapping them around each of his arms, electricity surging through him. The custodian laughed as he watched Kel's shuddering body. Then he realized that Kel wasn't shuddering anymore. There seemed to be more lightning than ever rippling over his body, and the guards' whips were lifeless. Their owners turned and ran, but before the custodian could join them, he felt the hulking form of Markan looming over him. Bloodbane the Poet would sing of their storming the fortress for years to come. The song would be heard across the galaxy. Everyone who heard it agreed that the best part was when the evil custodian ran away, screaming like a little girl. Zoe shut down the access panel and turned to check on the butcher bots. The two hulking machines were squatting on the floor, one using the razor-sharp skewer it had for an arm to scratch numbers into the floor. The other was scratching its head with a huge circular saw. As she made her way to the door, she peered at their work so far. You've forgotten to carry the 7, she told them, slipping back into the corridor. The Doctor's final opponent stepped into the arena and the crowd gasped. This would truly be a battle to remember. Zadok had entered the arena. 1,000 years before, the Bright Crusade had been launched. 1,000,000 of the finest warriors in the galaxy, pledging themselves to bring peace and justice to every world within it. The capture of a bright crusader had been the previous overlord's greatest triumph. Since then, Zarek's battles had been the greatest the arena had ever seen. Zarek's armor shone white and gold in the light, his eyes burning blue. He smiled at the doctor.
"I am sorry truly that you must die," he said,
his voice like honey and silk.
"But I gave my word to fight in this arena. And a crusader's word is his bond."
I thought the Bright Crusade was sworn to bring peace and protect life," said the doctor. Surely killing runs counter to all that you stand for."
"It does,"
admitted Zarek.
"But for so long as I fight here, Combatia takes but one subject from each world it visits. I fight to preserve peace and innocence. You will not sway me from my duty. We must battle, Doctor."
Oh dear, I'd rather hoped it wouldn't come to that. I'm really not much of a fighter. though I used to be..." He shuffled about, trying to find his stance. I'm really terribly sorry about this. I've not had much practice recently," he sighed. "Master Kulakut would be so very disappointed in me." The Bright Crusader froze.
"Master Kulakut?"
he asked, his voice shaking.
You trained under Grand Master Varys Kulakut?"
The doctor nodded. "It was a long time ago, of course. My Venusian Aikido will be terribly rusty now. I must get round to brushing it up one of these days." He sighed again. "Are you sure we have to fight?" Zarek didn't answer. He merely drew his sword, threw it to the ground, and knelt before the doctor, head bowed.
"I yield,"
he said. He had no other choice. He could never defeat a student of Varys Kulakut. "Oh, I say, that's very reasonable of you," said the doctor, smiling and helping him to his feet. From his vantage point in the throne room, the overlord would have exploded with rage if, at that precise moment, Jaime, Funakoshi, and hundreds of angry warriors hadn't burst in. Within hours, Combatia's days as a war world were ended. Corpulus and his minions would be taken to the Bright Crusade for judgment. The teleport system would be used to return the warriors to their homes. The doctor had assured Funakoshi that the TARDIS could get him home far more quickly, but Zoe had managed to talk him out of it. "It was an honour to fight with you," the little man told Jaime, shaking his hand and bowing as he did so.
"Aye, and you,"
Jaime replied with a grimace. Funakoshi smiled and then faded away as the doctor activated the teleport. "Well," he said, looking up, "I hope this means you've learnt not to wander off as soon as we land, Jaime." But Jaime and Zoe were already on their way back to the TARDIS. The doctor sighed and followed them. Yes, it was definitely time to have another go at Venusian Aikido. The Way of the Empty Hand by Julian Richards was read by Fraser Hines and is a Big Finish production.